Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. One of the new attractions of the Summer Olympics in Rio next month is the latest to have a dedicated service, rugby. However, the only way you can check out the Rugby Channel right now is via Roku, Apple TV, or Google Chromecast. Overseer David Sternberg joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. From a sports court, we'll move to the playground of unscripted competition television. Deborah Wolf has a new book about learning these ropes. It's called 1 Year of Reality and How It Nearly Killed Me. She elaborates on why later this hour. Also ahead, ABC's Got Games, successful games off the bat, series fest winners, and our classic trivia question of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Thanks for joining us on this Monday afternoon, wherever you are in June 2016. 83 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. We welcome you to the program All About Television. Great hour in store for you with two wonderful guests, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. You have a question, you have a comment, ring it in. Here's the number to use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Normally, we would also throw in another option, our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, normally found at our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. But we understand that there's a technical difficulty with the chat room, so at least for now, no chat room today. However, we do have Facebook timelines, so while the program is on the air, you can connect it with others by using that specific situation. Just click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. David Sternberg from the Rugby Channel joins me here in New York after these news notes. ABC's new 3-hour Sunday Fun and Games block came through with a fun opening night. Or, I should say, on an eve that was crowded with top attractions from the finale of Game of Thrones latest season on HBO to the BET Awards, each hour of game, the return of Celebrity Family Feud, and newcomers' $100,000 Pyramid and Match Game won its time period over the other broadcast networks. Of the three, Pyramid, hosted by Michael Strahan, was best in viewership with about 8 million tuning in. Celebrity Family Feud had 7.8 million with Steve Harvey returning as the host, and Match Game here in New York with Alec Baldwin presiding over things, 6.7 million. Series Fest wrapped its second annual TV Pilot Festival last night. Truth/Fiction, that is the name of that program, won the Best Comedy Prize, with far up for Best Drama. A new Diversity in Storytelling Award, sponsored by the LRA Network, went to Life's a Drag. And Rick World Chronicles, a winner at last fall's New York Television Festival, earned the audience pick honor. And finally, Freeform will give its Baby Daddy Comedy a 6th season, taking that series beyond 100 episodes. Season 5 resumed on June 1st. And that is our news notes for today. First came coverage of individual sports events on broadcast television. Then came the arrival of all sports networks on cable and other places like ESPN, NBCSN, and CBS Sports Network. And then came the rise of the single sport network. One network, 24/7, devoted to a single sport. Think the Golf Channel for golf, the Tennis Channel for tennis, Gold TV for soccer, NBA TV for basketball, etc., etc., etc. And now there is the Rugby Channel, 24/7 coverage of a sport that, in August, will make its debut as a Summer Olympic attraction. But there's one catch. The only way so far you can catch this 24/7 channel is using smart TV devices, specifically Roku, Google Chromecast, and Apple TV. Joining us live from New York is the overseer of the Rugby Channel as part of his duties heading Rugby International Marketing, the for-profit arm of USA Rugby, the organization out to cause rugby in this country. He's the former head of Fox Sports SBO. In that role, he was on our show a couple of years ago. It's great to welcome back David Sternberg. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Why was the time right for you and your colleagues to say, let's put a rugby channel on?
The origin of the Rugby Channel goes back about a year to the decision by USA Rugby, the governing body of the sport here in the U.S., to separate out a for-profit commercial arm called Rugby International Marketing that would be responsible for commercializing the sport in the U.S. So taking the marketing and sponsorship rights for U.S. national teams as well as the media rights for those competitions. And the board of USA Rugby was very focused on building out a media platform of its own to provide a degree of coverage for the sport that it never really has had on broadcast and cable TV in this country. There's been sporadic coverage here and there of rugby over the years, but there's never been one destination where hardcore and even casual fans of the sport could go to watch live matches, both domestically and internationally, and to go back and look at archival and classic content on an on-demand basis. So that was the thought behind launching the Rugby Channel. And from there, we went to work on making it a reality.
As someone who's had in getting new channels off the ground, was broadcast or cable or satellite distribution or video on demand distribution looked at? And if they were, why not go that route as opposed to going through smart TV devices like Roku?
It was certainly looked at, but I think the consensus at board level very quickly became focused on digital direct-to-consumer distribution as the best way forward. It's very hard, as you know, Simon, to get distribution for any independent startup linear network on the cable and satellite platforms in this country. And with the consolidation of that end of the industry that's happened in the last few years, it's become even more challenging, and certainly something that I had some experience with during my years as a cable network executive. So I think collectively we felt that we'd have a much better chance of reaching our target audience by going over the top, so to speak, and developing a product that would work well with connected devices as well as be available to users via the internet and smartphone apps.
Mm-hmm. Is it very simple to get a service like this on a Roku, on a Chromecast, on an Apple TV compared to anywhere else?
I think it's pretty easy to create an app for all of those platforms. They all have very clear and well-established development guidelines that they make available to any content owner. You need to have a development partner for your product that understands how to build those apps. But, you know, if you have the wherewithal to do it, it's a pretty straightforward and rapid process. Whereas, as you know, launching a satellite-delivered cable channel is a very expensive and time-consuming undertaking.
So how is this channel designed in terms of showcasing rugby at different levels, the college level, the worldwide level, getting ready for the Summer Olympics in Rio in early August? What was the game plan in terms of assembling the programming and assembling how the style, the pace of the channel would go?
Well, the starting point for the channel was the live and on-demand video content that USA Rugby controls. So all of the matches played by our men's and women's national teams, both in the sevens form of the game, which is the shortened format that you'll see in the Olympics, and the more traditional 15s format. On top of those national teams, we also control the national college championships for men and women and the national club championship. So really our content goes down to the grassroots level in this country. In addition, we've brought in content and competitions from around the world. We have the rights in the U.S. to the Guinness Pro 12, which is the top professional league in Scotland, Ireland, and Wales. We have access to the national team matches of England through an investment in our company that was made by the Rugby Football Union, which is the governing body of English rugby. And we also have access to competitions from World Rugby, which is the governing body of the sport around the world. So it's a great mix of domestic and international live and on-demand video programming.
And when you're referring to numbers like rugby 7, rugby 15, that refers to how many people are on a team, 7 people on a team or squad, 15 people on a team, and the other form, other well-known form of rugby.
Exactly right.
David Sternberg, the former host of Fox Sports Espanola, is the overseer of the Rugby Channel. He does it through his role with an organization called Rugby International Marketing. It's the for-profit unit of USA Rugby, the governing body of the sport here in the United States. He joins us live here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for David, ring it in, 646-652-2906. And once again, if you want to catch the Rugby Channel, you have to do so using a smart TV device, specifically Apple TV, Roku, and Google Chromecast. This is the first of three episodes we're doing this week. Next episode is Wednesday at this very hour. And joining us will be last year's winner of the American Black Film Festival for Best TV Screenplay Competition. And according to their deal with TV One, that screenplay of last year becomes a made-for-TV movie next week on that network. It's called Bad Dad Rehab, and we will have the author, Taronga McKnight. Also, our good friend Will Richman, the founder of the wonderful website Video News, will join us, and we'll talk about where smart TV sets and smart devices are going the second half of 2016 and beyond. And we may have another guest or two for you as well. It's all starting 3 o'clock Eastern, New Pacific, Wednesday, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. David, what's been the early reaction of viewers to Rugby Channel?
It's been very positive. We soft launched the platform at the beginning of April, and it's really only in the last couple of weeks that we've begun to make a bigger push from a marketing standpoint to acquire users and subscribers. But the response has been great. The channel itself is basically a freemium offering, to use that term. There's a great deal of short-form video content, as well as some news articles and statistics that are available to all users at no cost whatsoever. And then we have a subscription premium offering, which features all of the live and full-length replays of domestic and international matches. So for the fan who wants to go deeper, the subscription portion of the channel is available for a monthly fee of $4.99 or an annual subscription fee of $49.99. So it's a hybrid business model and one that we think will be very successful.
Is there any advertising whatsoever on the channel?
We have a little bit of advertising at the moment for some of our USA Rugby commercial partners, but that part of it is not fully built out yet. We're obviously hoping to garner as big an audience as we can before we start monetizing the audience in that way.
Mm-hmm. Is there a sports center type program on the channel that alerts people to what is going on, the news of the day, the news of the week in the sport?
Yes. We have an original weekly newscast called the Rugby Channel Report. It's uploaded every Tuesday, so it covers all of the previous weekend's action from domestic rugby as well as highlights from around the world. We produce it out of a studio in Los Angeles, and it averages about 10 minutes in length, and it's a great way for fans to get caught up on everything that's happening in the sport internationally as well as here in the States.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does the Rugby Channel going on 24/7, how does it impact the relationship that the sport has with various other providers? For example, NBC recently carried, I believe it was the College Rugby Championship. I don't know if it's NCAA sanctioned, but it seemed like it was USA Rugby sanctioned in Rugby Sevens. And I think you have other situations that maybe on ESPN or other networks. So how does the channel's existence impact the relationship you have with other TV outlets?
Well, the Rugby Channel is not ever going to be the sole and exclusive outlet for all of our content from USA Rugby. We still want to have the shop window, if you will, on more fully distributed linear TV platform. So, you know, we've continued to work with a variety of broadcast partners for different events. You mentioned NBC Sports, which does some coverage of the College Sevens Invitational Tournament that is USA Rugby sanctioned. We also reached an agreement earlier this month to have two international matches, USA against Italy and Russia, televised on a delayed basis on the CBS Sports Network, which is the first time that they had had national team rugby on that channel. So there are lots of different platforms that we've worked with, and we'll continue to do that to find the best mix of platforms and you know, the maximum exposure for our sport.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, what's happening about the NBC coverage of these college teams was that they were playing, I believe, like 11 or 12 minute halves, two halves per game. And the fact, and the idea was that they could possibly play two games in a single day. You had like groups of four teams in divisions, and they would play round robin, and then they would return for semifinals and finals.
Yeah, no, that's the great thing about the rugby sevens format is the games are short. The halves are, 10 minutes long, and you've got a very fast moving, high scoring game that is, I think, easier for a lot of casual fans and audiences that haven't seen rugby before to relate to. So that that becomes a great point of entry for fans to the sport, and I think we'll be successful in that respect at the Olympics as well.
Yeah. I want to get to the Olympics in a moment, David, but one thing I was curious about is, and I've seen rugby way back in the 60s when the championship of the world was on ABC's Wide World of Sports every year, hosted by Jimmy Kay. And it's that, is the channel being used in a way to clear up any misperceptions about the game? One of the things about the game is it's almost nonstop action. But people sometimes wonder, like, how does one team get control of the ball when you've got the passing from one person to another person in terms of, how many chances they make to get from one side of the field to the other and score the try, which is sort of the sports version of touchdown.
Yeah, look, it's the traditional 15s form of rugby is something that takes a little bit of time to learn and understand. There are a lot of elements of the game that are very similar to American football, and you can see where American football evolved from rugby in terms of the scoring and the emphasis on speed and tackling, et cetera. But probably the biggest difference is that there is no forward passing in rugby, whereas that's a huge element of American football. And what happens in the scrum when the two teams sort of face off against each other over the ball can sometimes be hard to follow because of the number of people that are aggregated there in one place. But I do think that for American audiences, there is a lot of similarity, and there are a lot of things that that in this country we love about American football that easily translate to this sport.
Also, there's elements of soccer, the passing, for example, and some of the kicking down the stretch, where you have to do these field goals or point afters. Sometimes straight dead on to the goalpost. Sometimes it's from the way off the side kind of thing. I was curious, in terms of additional distribution, are you talking to Amazon Fire TV, Shield, other over-the-top devices, as well as smart TV sets, the likes of LG and Vizio and Samsung?
Yeah, I don't think we're finished in terms of our product development. We are in the process of building apps for a couple more connected device platforms that we'll be announcing within the next 2 months. And we're also looking at ways of distributing this content on other OTT platforms on more of an affiliate model basis. So I think you'll find that within the next 6 months, there are many more ways to access the Rugby Channel content than we have today. I might add also, Simon, that we do have a web-based platform that is accessible at therugbychannel.tv. So if you don't have one of the connected devices that you mentioned, there's still a way to access all of the programming.
And if you want to know more about the parent organization of this whole enterprise online, here's where you go, www.usarugby.org. That's usarugby.org. David Sternberg is the overseer of the Rugby Channel. It is a 24/7 television service that's available right now on Roku, Apple TV, and Google Chromecast, other places to come in the future. He joins us live here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow When We Televise. We are the program All About Television. Delighted to have you with us, normally Mondays and Fridays at this hour here on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for David, ring it in, 646-652-2906. For those who just came in late, no chat room today because of a technical glitch. We think it's emanating either from Blog Talk Radio or between Blog Talk Radio and yours truly and all of you. By the way, next week we'll be on at special times because of the 4th of July holiday weekend. Tuesday, that's July 6th, same hour, 3 to 4 Eastern Time, noon to 1 on the West Coast. But also, a week from Friday, that's July 8th, we'll be with you at a very early time, 11 a.m. Eastern, and that's 8 a.m. Pacific. And among our guests will be one of the first national interviews from the new commissioner of the New York City Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment, Julie Medin. You'll hear her live. It's one of her first interviews on a national level right here. That's between 8 and 9, and that's between 11 and noon Eastern, 8 to 9 Pacific time, exclusively with us right here on Tomorrow We Televise. David, what's the expectations from your organization about how the U.S. will do in rugby in Rio, and what kind of coverage will the Rugby Channel have?
Well, I think the U.S. teams are expected to do quite well in both men's and women's sevens in Rio. The men's team is ranked 5th in the world, and the women's team is ranked 6th. And both have, I would say, a good shot at a medal. The Olympic Games, as you know, Simon, are exclusively distributed in all media in the U.S. by NBC Sports. And our friends at NBC have told us that they plan to give a great deal of exposure, including some prime time live slots to rugby sevens during the first week of the games in August. The Rugby Channel itself will have some background video and other content related to the team, interviews with players, kind of an overview of how the team came together and got to where it is. But the live coverage from Rio, as you would expect, will be with NBC.
In the last decade and change, we've seen the formation of Major League Soccer. We've seen the formation of Major League Lacrosse. The NCAA has a very popular lacrosse championship on ESPN. It's now become a Memorial Day tradition. How far are we from a professional Major League Rugby league, both men's and women's?
Well, actually, there is now a professional league for men's 15s rugby. It's called Pro, Professional Rugby Organization, and they just launched for the first time, the first ever league earlier this year, back in April. They have five teams in Columbus, Denver, San Francisco, Sacramento, and San Diego, and I think they've gotten off to a pretty good start. They've created positions and jobs for 100 professional rugby players in the U.S., and the league is committed to growing the number of teams and establishing a bigger geographical footprint going forward. So I think it's a great start, and I would anticipate there being continued growth there.
Is your channel carrying any of those games?
We're not at the moment, but we are talking to the organizers of the league about getting involved in covering their games, both live and in other forms. We currently show highlights of their games as part of our weekly Rugby Channel report, the news bulletin that we produce. And hopefully we'll find other ways to collaborate in their future seasons.
And what about a professional rugby seven league, B, a women's league?
Both have been talked about a bit in the last few years. There are a couple of groups that are looking to establish an ongoing sevens league or tournament. We're in discussions at the Federation about how we can be supportive of that. Women's rugby is currently pretty vibrant at the club level in the U.S. And, you know, there are discussions ongoing about how we can elevate the standard of play there and make that into more of a spectator sport and a media property.
Yeah. Then before we let you go, what's it been like for you to oversee this all and to, in a way, be the advocate or the lead advocate for taking a sport like this and making it mainstream?
For me personally, it's very reminiscent of the experience that I had with soccer when I was an executive at Fox Cable. We launched Fox Sports World back in the late 90s as basically an all-soccer channel and helped to grow the audience for the game with our coverage of the Premier League from England and Italian Serie A and other competitions. And I'd like to think that, you know, we're at a similar juncture 20 years later with rugby, where you know, there's starting to be a greater awareness of just how great a sport this can be, not just for participants, but also for spectators. And I think we have a similar trajectory to look forward to, and it will definitely be helped by the return to the Olympics. Rugby Sevens World Cup will be hosted in San Francisco in the U.S. In 2018, which is only 2 years away. So those are all significant turning points that I think will help to put this sport on the map in the same way that soccer now is.
The Rugby Channel. You can catch it now on Apple TV, on Roku, on Google Chromecast, other smart devices, and down the road smart TV sets in the offering. If you want more details about the network and also see it online, if you don't have any of those devices, here's where you go, www.therugbychannel.tv. That's www.therugbychannel.tv. And for more details about the organization that is organizing rugby in terms of its development in this country, nonprofit, is www.usarugby.org. That's www.usarugby.org. And if you've never tried the sport, check it out. If it comes to a TV set near you or a location near you in person, it's a dynamite sport. And I think it's on the way for greater things, just like soccer and lacrosse has over the last decade and change. David Sternberg, the overseer of the Rugby Channel, thank you again for joining us. All the best to you with this wonderful venture, and good luck to then women's teams competing in August in Rio.
Thank you very much, Simon.
You're welcome, David. A pleasure. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
David Sternberg, the head of the Rugby Channel and president of the parent organization Rugby International Marketing from USA Rugby, joining us live here in New York. Coming up, our Classic Kitty Question of the Week, and our second guest, the author of the new book, One Year of Reality and How It Nearly Killed Me, Deborah Wolf, who will join us live from Los Angeles. But first, a message from the fine people at Audible.com. Are you a fan of Twilight Zone? You love those great classic tales from Rod Serling, Richard Matheson, and Charles Beaumont and company that continue to be television classics? Well, if you want a different kind of experience, but get into the zone in a great way, try out the Twilight Zone Radio Dramas. It's one of the newest titles at Audible.com. And it's a title that can be yours if you go to this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, and get yourself a free 30-day trial. And you can get the Twilight Zone Radio Dramas for free. Twilight Zone is one of the more than 180,000 titles available to you through Audible.com. That's why they are a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. And you can listen to those titles on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, through Blog Talk Radio. So the whole trick is you sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, get that one free audio book. It could be the Twilight Zone Radio Dramas. It could be Charlie Rosen's latest interviews from Public Television and Bloomberg Television, or a lot of other great titles to choose from. dealing with television, radio, science, the best novels around, classics, all over the place. You get one free audiobook and 1 month trial of the service, and given that Audible.com is owned by Amazon, you know the customer service is going to be dynamite. So check out this URL and get aboard, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised, and find out why Audible.com is a great sound investment. When we come back, the author of 1 Year of Reality and How It Nearly Killed Me, a year in the life of author Deborah Wolf. She worked on Audible, she worked on The Amazing Race, Fear Factor, and The Mole, all in the same year. She's with us to tell us all about it from Los Angeles after we pull up the bottom of the hour for web identification. You want to connect to the best internet radio on the planet? www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the most unpredictable show on Monday Night Radio. It's the Key of the Unplugged Show, and you can catch it tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern. That's 3 p.m. on the West Coast, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best of BTR available 24/7 at YouTube.com and also on the iTunes podcast app available when you have Apple TV 2.0. Welcome back for the second half of Tomorrow We Televised on this Monday, June afternoon of 2016. Simon Applebaum here live from New York, 83 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our next guest, ring it in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. No chat room today because of a technical glitch somewhere along the line, and we apologize for that. Our second guest today is the author of a new book that you can find on Amazon.com. It's all about her experience in the world of unscripted competition television. It's called 1 Year of Reality and How It Nearly Killed Me. We're talking about her work on three of the most popular competition shows of that period, The Fear Factor, The Amazing Race, and The Mole. Joining me live from Los Angeles, Deborah Wolf. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Simon. Thank you.
You are very, very welcome. So how did you get into or jump or leap into this world of unscripted TV?
Well, I started working at MGM Television as a corporate production coordinator, and I wanted to go freelance. So I decided to become a coordinator freelance and hooked up with a group that did a show called Wild Things. And that executive producer happens to be the executive producer of Amazing Race, and that's how it started.
So what was your precognition going in about how the experience would be? What did you think you were going to do? How did you think the experience was going to go? And then what was the reality when it hit you?
Well, how it was, I thought it was going to go was similar to what I had done on the Wildlife show, where I would be going into the office during the day, handling any issues during the day, going home at night. What happened was I had, once the show started on Amazing Race, as first seasons go, they're always the toughest. And it started to fall apart, and it was all hands on deck, needed to fly out immediately to go overseas and help out with the show. So that was a first for me. I never traveled overseas. And so I had 6 hours basically to pack and get on a plane and go to France for the first time. And after that, I had no idea what it was going to be like, except there's no room for failure, so you just have to keep going.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was the source of the breakdown? Why did things break down so early?
I think what happened was a lot of the crew had gotten sick from maybe some of the food they ate, or, you know, it all looks good on paper, but until you actually do it, you can't think of all the problems that could happen or all the personalities involved. It's because it's unscripted, there's a lot of unknowns that you just can't always plan for.
Mm-hmm. So once you had to pack those bags, get on that flight, become the crew, if you will, somewhere else, where did things go from there?
Well, it sort of went downhill for me because at the same time I was trying to help out with the crew, I wasn't quite sure what was needed. So every day was a fire. There was a fire every day. And as soon as I hit my first location, which was France for Amazing Race, everybody was sick, so I just gave them medication, and people needed money, so I hit the ATM, and, more people had to come, so I also had to make sure we had visas and passports all in order for each country we were going to as we added more people to try and help make the show run more smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of work.
Yeah. mm-hmm. Got it. If you have a question or comment for Deborah Wolf, who is the author of One New York Reality and How It Nearly Killed Me, My Life Behind the Scenes, now available on Amazon.com, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. As always, the number is good anywhere. Catch us across the country, around this globe of ours, right here on Blog Talk Radio. No chat room today because of a technical glitch that we apologize for, and we hope to have that glitch wrapped up and gone from this earth by our next show, which is Wednesday at regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. This is the first of three shows we're doing, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, all at this hour. So, Deborah, what kept you going? Was it working with the contestants, playing babysitter in a way, or being more intimate with the way the show was going?
I enjoyed the people that I worked with. I really liked them. I wanted to do good work for them. I didn't want to fail. I didn't want them to fail. And so you just do whatever you can to keep everything going. You don't want to get fired, and you don't want people to think that you're not good at your job, so you do whatever you can to keep everything going so you can get your next gig too.
Many people in the TV industry consider Amazing Race the class of that kind of competition. It's won Emmy Awards, it's won other major awards, it continues to do well no matter what time period, it's on CBS. Why do you think that show has had sort of the equivalent of lasting appeal in this genre of television?
I think it's because that the people that they really select are very entertaining. The traveling that they do, people want to travel and go over the world, so they're sort of living through these people going through these events. They also want to see what they can do, what can happen. I mean, people like competition. So I think that's the success. I think it wins a lot of Emmys because of just how complicated the show is to put together and just how intricate it is each time they do it. It's a lot of wheels, a lot of stuff.
And how was it like working with the host, Phil Kogan?
He was very nice. I don't know if he would remember me, but I really liked him, and he had a great presence. He seemed very calming. I just wish the best for him. He was just a wonderful person.
I remember him from a show called Fox After Breakfast, and before that, Breakfast Time on FX, where he's one of the roving reporters on that series that was hosted by Tom Bergeron and Laurie Hibbard. And I always thought his segments were wonderful. They were very imaginative. He was, like, always game to do something unusual, being out there in the wild or being out there somewhere in this great country of ours, and always coming up with something worthwhile for people to see.
Yeah, he certainly has that personality of just getting out there and doing anything. He was great.
What came next after Amazing Race, Fear Factor or The Mole?
The Mole came next. And that was,
that's the ABC series with Anderson Cooper. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that was the last season that they had Anderson Cooper on. It was season two. And he was fun to work with as well. But at that point, after having gone through Amazing Race, I sort of knew what was kind of going to happen going overseas, because that was a show I was to go overseas. That was planned.
And what happened there?
Well, we just, it was actually a smooth show. It was just long, long hours and just stuff, crazy stuff happening. I talk about in the book the fire that happened at like 4 o'clock in the morning, where one of the battery belts had caught on fire, and I had to open the door to, put out the fire with half-dressed, wrong half. But it was just a lot of long hours. I think sometimes have an hour or half hour sleep before the next call, so it was a very long, long time.
Mm-hmm. The trick of that series was that you had this group of contestants who are all trying to figure out who is sort of the insider, who is the mole that's sort of causing all the havoc or gets credit with all the havoc. And
Right. Obviously
there are a lot of like red herrings along the way and confusing the heck out of everybody. What was it like working with the contestants, especially when you had to be in the know, or one would think you would be in the know all along as who the mole was?
Well, we all had different cards that we would have that we would wear, because it would actually tell us who had the most information. I had a tag that said I didn't know who the mole was. The producer would have a tag who knew who the mole was. So I was out of the loop on a lot of that. I did keep all their luggage, because when someone was left off the show, they would get their luggage and fly back to where, either to a holding hotel or back home. I should have figured it out that the person with no luggage or with hardly anything in their luggage would have been the mole, because why would they pack? But I never even thought about it.
So on top of those two shows, which would be probably enough for a lot of folk, you then get into Fear Factor, which was certainly, of the three, maybe the most controversial of the bunch, and one of the most controversial ever because of the stunts that the contestants had to go through.
Right. They always had to make sure the stunts would work ahead of time, so you had a stunt crew who would practice the practice each one to make sure it was doable, and then I volunteered as a taste tester to taste things to make sure that those stunts could be done as well.
And what are some of the things that you tasted?
Well, I ate the 100-year-old egg. I drank about a 12-ounce glass of pig brains, cow eyeballs, and bile. So this is great, you know, for a lunch. If someone wants to go on a diet, I'll tell them everything I ate. And every once in a while, they just bring pig parts or different animal parts, and I would just taste it. And I would say something like, need salt. But there were things I wouldn't even touch that other people did, like the they had blood balls, and it was like spaghetti and meatballs, but it was blood balls and worms. That's not something I would test.
Yeah, and probably not a lot of restaurants. or elsewhere, even if they had a predictable recipe, I think they'd probably hands off. But that's another story. Devin Wolf is the author of a new book that's out on Amazon.com. It's called 1 Year of Reality and How It Nearly Killed Me, My Life Behind the Scenes. She's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Tom and Applebaum here with you live from NYC here on Blog Talk Radio. Glad you're with us on this June Monday afternoon of 2016, last one of the month and last one of the first half of the year. If you have a question or comment for Deborah, don't be shy. Ring it in, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us, anywhere on earth, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Coming up on our next episode, that's Wednesday at this hour, we will have the Lewis winner of the American Black Film Festival screenplay winner. She won it last year. Her name is Karanda McKnight, and her screenplay win is for a film called Bad Dad Rehab. It premieres next week on TV1, and we'll have Karanda with us as our lead guest. Also, our good friend from Video News, the popular website dealing with all things smart TV, smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and online, Will Richmond. He had the online video ad summit a couple weeks ago here in New York over at the Westin Times Square Hotel, and we'll get his thoughts about how the first half of this year has gone for the smart TV population and where we'll go the second half of this year and beyond. Karanda McKnight from Bad Dad Rehab on TV1, Will Richmond, the editor of Video News, and we may have some more guests also coming your way. That's all Wednesday, special edition, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific here on Tomorrow We Televise. Why did you decide, after so much time has passed, that this was the time to write this book about your experiences?
Well, I actually finished the book in 2006, and I sort of sat on it because I think time needed to go by. I wrote it because I just felt that everyone that I work with and a lot of the people who work on these international shows all have stories, not like mine, but similar. And it's just a way of showing other people, hey, this is what happens behind some of these shows. People that don't know the series can have a more of an appreciation, and those of us who work on them can go, yeah, right on, I'm glad you wrote the book. We go through all of that, too.
Mm-hmm. What do you wish people would, from this book, people would appreciate about the job you and other folks had working behind the scenes on these shows?
It's like the Ginger Rogers, Fred Astaire thing. I want people to understand that, you know, the contestants are the, you know, Fred Astaire, but the cameraman and everyone else is the Ginger Rogers doing everything backwards or, you know, making sure they get everything on the air, that it's more complicated than it seemingly looks. There's just a lot of parts that make a show happen, especially in the unscripted realm, since a lot of it's unknown and you can't manipulate the outcome of these competition shows, so you have to kind of fly by your heels and just figure things out, which is actually the thing that's the most interesting about it, is you get to figure stuff out. You're fixing things every day. It's not the same old. It's just fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And finally, for those of you just came in late on the show. We're going to have our classic trivia question of the week after our interview with Deborah, so stick around because you could win, if you're first with the correct answer, Twin Peaks FAQ. It's the brand-new book that showcases the classic ABC series and the upcoming Showtime revival. And if you want to check out what we did with the authors, go to www.youtube.com/vricktv. The authors of Twin Peaks FAQ were on BK Live. That's the Marvel Televised segment that I do for. I should say BK Live is the weekly, is the daily noontime hour program. It's available here in New York on BRIC TV. That's the cable channel available throughout New York City on Verizon Fios and throughout Brooklyn on Charter, formerly Time Warner Cable, Cablevision Systems and RCN, and then both the show and my Marvel Televised episodes that usually happen on Monday afternoon, like the one last week with the Twin Peaks authors. That's at youtube.com/BRICTV, youtube.com/BRICTV. So stick around. Class jury question coming up in a little bit, and you could win if you're first with the correct answer. Ever since your time with those three shows, what are your favorite reality competition shows?
Oh, wow, my favorite reality. It's not necessarily reality, but America's Got Talent. I like that a lot. The Voice, those kind of shows are really the shows that I enjoy. Very positive, you know, helping people, you know, win their dream. I always like watching that. I also watched last night all the ABC game shows coming back, Match Game, $100,000 Pyramid and stuff. That was just pure enjoyment.
What do you think of those shows? What do you think of we mentioned in our news note at the top of the show that they were number one in their time period.
Yeah, I used to watch them as a kid, so I loved it. It's just wonderful to go back to those and see how they're done, and it brings up a whole crop of new jobs and work for people in that genre because that had gone away for such a long time.
What hit me, Deborah, was that, first of all, two of the three games came from New York. One was Match Game, the other was Pyramid. And with those two games in particular, I thought it was wonderful that they respected the way the originals went. They were not overdone. They were not overhyped. There wasn't special moody lighting or anything like that. They used the original theme music in both cases. I thought Strahan was terrific as the host of Pyramid. I thought Alec Baldwin was good for the most part as the host. He had sort of the Gene Rayburn persona down, but the celebrities worked well together. The one quiz I have of Baldwin is I thought that when the contestant who lost left, that person was not given a proper send-off. You know, Gene Rayburn would say, we appreciate being here. Thanks for joining us. Say goodbye to who the contestant was. And I thought that Baldwin, rather than do that with some class, threw in like a crazy joke, like the joke on the second half of the show where she lost because of Uranus, which was a reference to one of the clues of the blank. And I just thought that that contestants are better.
Yeah, I totally get that. I did like the one piece, though, was the microphone. The old Gene Rayburn microphone was there.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice touch.
Yeah. And by the way, Deborah, way back in 1980, when I started covering television for a living, one of the first interviews I did was with Bob Stewart, the creator of The Pyramid, and who, for me, next to Mark Goodson and Bill Tom, was probably the best game show producer ever. Worked on The Price is Right, Password, and so on. And he passed away a few years ago, and I'm sure he was smiling from up above. I thought the way they handled Pyramid, the set, the way Strahan went, the use of the original sound effects, particularly in the winner's circle, I thought was really terrific. And it was great to see the judging of the show because one of the tricks about that show is you really have to earn the money. You have to give that list of the things that fit the subject. You say anything else, you're buzzed. That's it. And it was great to see that, you know, the contestants really had to work hard to win the money. And also, you notice that the contestants gave the clues as opposed to the celebrities giving the clues. And I thought that really added something to
Kathy Najimy had done it, was on 100,000 Pyramid as a contestant, so she was great. She already knew the show
because
she'd already been on it.
And here's the irony, Deborah. She also did one of the first episodes of the remake that Sony did with Donny Osmond. And unfortunately, that remake got off to a bad start when in the first winner's circle round, one of the subjects, the categories, was things a rental car could say. And she used she gave the clues, and she used the word auto, which should have been an automatic buzz. But the judges let it go. The person went on and went $10,000. And as it turned out, that version lasted only 2 years. And one of the big reasons why, for me, personal thought, was that while Donny Osmond was a wonderful host, that they didn't do the show right, and one of the ways was the judging. It was very poor. They let people win when they should not have won. And but the nice thing, Kathy learned from that, and it was great. It was great sort of like full circle that here she is helping people win the money.
Well, Donny Osmond also was a guest on Fear Factor, so I have a photo of myself with Donny Osmond. It was like a dream come true.
He's great. He's a wonderful. He was terrific. He deserved it. He got an Emmy nomination for the first European, the Daytime Emmy nomination, and he deserved it. He was wonderful. Right up there with Dick Clark, right up there with Trey Henry, Bill Cullen, anyone else who produced the show. It sounds like you're a big game show fan.
Oh, I love game shows. I love television. I mean, I could watch it all day.
And what are you doing now in the media? What plans do you have? If you're not doing something right now, what do you plan to do?
Well, I just finished working on two international documentary shows for a confidential client because we can't release information yet. But it was in 15 different countries. It was a lot of fun. I didn't travel, but I certainly traveled everybody. So we had a great time with that. And I hope to start a new project in a couple of weeks, which I'm waiting to chomp at the bit. And then I hopefully will get a second book writing very soon.
Mm. And by the way, are either of those shows going to be on American television?
I'm sorry? Oh, no. I don't know if they are. I don't know. It's for potentially another space, like an internet space. It's supposed to be announced, I think, at the end of the year. I'm not really sure.
Well, keep us posted because if, for example, they happen to show up on Roku or Apple TV or Chromecast, like the Rugby Channel in our first half hour, or they show up on Amazon Fire or through smart TV sets, let us know. That would qualify because that way they would get exposure here in the U.S. of A.
Absolutely, Simon. I will definitely let you know.
Mm-hmm. And if you do write another book, would it be about television or you want another topic?
Well, it's another topic. It's something that's mentioned in the book that I wrote in that when I lived in Venice, California for 15 years, I had 25 roommates. And so I'm going to turn that into a fiction book because I had a bodybuilder live with me, a woman with her daughter, with her son, and I had a whole poker group. It was just crazy times. It was a lot of fun. I think it would be fun summer reading.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you got the subject matter for it, and it's like voluminous, so look out, world. One other thing, from when you lived all this to now, was there a reality show that you wish in retrospect you could have worked on, whether it was a competition show or a straight unscripted show?
I would really like to work on America's Got Talent if I could. I think that would be amazing. That would be my dream job, I think.
It's still doing great and growing strong, even with the change of judges on NBC. It's on Tuesday nights at 8 to 10.
Yeah.
And the acts get greater and greater. It just seems that when you think they can't come up with something new and different under the sun, they certainly do.
And it's well cut together. The pacing is great. Oh, it's just wonderful.
The book is One Year of Reality and How It Nearly Killed Me by our guest Deborah Wolf, My Life Behind the Scenes. I think you'll love the reading, and you can find it on Amazon.com. That's Amazon.com. Once again, the title, One Year of Reality and How It Nearly Killed Me. Deborah Wolf, it's been wonderful to have you on the program. All the best for your future endeavors, and let us know when you get something that we'll see on American television or when your next novel, your next book is coming up. We'd love to have you back anytime.
Simon, thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Same here. All the greatest to you, Deborah. All the greatest. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Deborah Wolf, the author of One Year of Reality and How to Kill Me, available on Amazon.com and joining us live from Los Angeles. And before we go, it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. If you are first with the correct answer, you can win Twin Peaks FAQ. It's the latest in Applause Books line of FAQs, dealing with, in this case, with the classic ABC series as well as the upcoming Showtime revival. Here's our question. Remember Cagney and Lacey, the popular CBS detective series by two New York City people on the prowl? Well, the original Cagney was not played by Sharon Gless. Who did play the original Cagney for the first season and the made-for-TV movie that spawned the series? That's our question. Who was the original Cagney on Cagney and Lacey? Who was the original Cagney on Cagney and Lacey? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and your full mailing address. You can also use Twitter to get the answer in with this hashtag, TWBT. That's hashtag TWBT. And that Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch, the folks that invite you to create your own social soundtrack. Learn how at www.hopscotch.com. Remember, if you missed the question just now, don't worry. We'll post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. And, of course, because we have the special episode coming up Wednesday, we'll also replay that question during that episode. So, once again, if you want to compete, be first to win. Twin Peaks FAQ is SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. Or use Twitter, hashtag TWBT. But remember, either way, you got to be in to win. So get in quick as you can, and all the very best. Remember, we are back with you on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And joining us there will be the 2015 winner of the American Black Film Festival's Best TV Screenplay Contest, Karonda McKnight. Her work is Bad Dad Rehab. It premieres as TV1's latest original movie next week. She's with us live as our lead guest. Also, the editor of the popular website, Video News, which also does the annual online video ad summit recently at the Westin Times Square here in New York. Our good friend Will Richmond will talk about smart TV sets and smart devices and what may end up being the most important development in television this year, this decade, and beyond. And we may have some other wonderful guests for you as well. So join us Wednesday, nearly 48 hours from now, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio, and then we'll have a Friday episode for you to start off your July and second half of 2016. And don't forget, coming out next week, we're with you Tuesday because of the July 4th weekend, and then July 8th at our special time, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, one of our guests, Julie Menon, the new commissioner of Mayor Bill de Blasio's New York Office of Media and Entertainment. Remember, if you'd like to comment on our program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version of the show. It's always available on iTunes.com and on the iTunes podcast app, along with other Blog Talk Radio shows, available through Apple TV 2.0. If you don't have that wonderful set-top box, get it at your local Apple store or visit online. Remember, we love hearing from you, so get it in at SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. At SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. I do return emails in 24 hours. You can also find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Again, thank you all of our guests for a wonderful hour, and all of you, of course, for listening. And remember, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates are Amy DeMexico and Candace Williams. Andy Toth is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator and chief executive of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow's Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information, and an Amazon company. For Tomorrow's Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you all for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday. We're back with you in less than 48. That's Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. In the interim, please be safe and be great. And until next time, stay well and stay tuned.